89 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning. Good morning.
The eye-opener.
And I'ma get it. Oh, I know what I'm doing. Patience and it's, I know what I'm doing. Baby, staring at it. I know what I'm doing. Staring at a gladiator. Talking about a revolution. No, this is not a good novel. I'm talking turnout.
And good morning, good morning, good morning. And welcome to the eye-opener, your weekly dose of something slightly, most of the time, for the most part, kind of, sort of different. I'm one of your hosts, Don, joining me also via Zoom, should be Tate Adderley. Tate, are you there?
Can you hear me, Don?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear with your Comcast internet.
Yeah.
Listen, we kind of say this almost every other week. This has been an interesting week. I think this has been a nail-biting week. Tate, I dare say borderline a dumpster fire for the region. For those who aren't aware, it just seems to be the case that the tensions between the United States and Venezuela, our neighbors to the south, are escalating continuously. The Trinidadian Defense Force apparently has been actually all personnel called to their bases. You know, usually that happens in times of an emergency, although the Prime Minister of Trinidad has denied that being the case. And it's kind of strange because people were videoing and photographing the Defense Force personnel in Trinidad, essentially streaming into the various bases around the country. But so, strange times we live in. Apparently, there are multiple reports, including from Trinidadian news sources, that they are... We don't know who, but we know who is apparently jamming GPS signals in Venezuela, and that the United States has closed off an air corridor in Puerto Rico for, and I quote, national security purposes as more U.S. warships stream into the Caribbean Sea. So for those who haven't paid attention to the situation, it seems pretty clear that some kinetic action is going to happen in the region. When, we don't know. But there are too many strategic pieces in place for nothing to happen. Now, nothing can happen. It's possible. It could be a Taco Tuesday take. But I think it's more likely that you're going to see some explosions inside Venezuela, because apparently that makes sense. So it is what it is. And I bring that up because CARICOM is basically in shambles, lack of a better term. Nobody's telling the truth about anything. I even saw a news report yesterday, one of the report, kind of a video of journalists asking President Trump some questions in reference to the situation in Trinidad and Venezuela, of which he said, in essence, that he's not considering strikes at this time. And, you know... But then he says this, and his cabinet says something different. So I don't know. I guess we can't pay attention to what any leaders in the region, including the United States, has to say. We just have to see what happens. And what that means for the Bahamas and the wider Caribbean is quite literally it's likely. I don't know what's going to happen, but it could be likely that our region becomes the center of the next global, not global, but the center of the next major conflicts in the world, which kind of is not great because that brings about disruptions and tons of things. And I don't know how this will affect trade relationships within CARICOM moving forward. especially with Trinidad doing and saying the things they have, that CARICOM are unreliable partners, and that apparently all other CARICOM nations aside from Trinidad have taken the side of Venezuela, which is a wild thing to say. But here we are, Tate.
Yeah.
This is insanity, it feels like. I'm hearing basically the same things that I heard when I was a child about the global war on terror, how essentially now Venezuela has Iranian drone bases and they're building missiles and they're gearing up to attack America. And I'm like, what the hell are we talking about? I thought they were poor. I thought you sanctioned them to pieces. You barred the Bahamas and every other CARICOM country from doing business with them. You burned the Petro-Caribe Agreement. You don't allow any of us to interact with Venezuela on an economic basis other than, what is it again? There's the sanctions package and the law that they passed a couple of years back has some key provisions that allow take place, because there is a business relationship between Trinidad and Venezuela for their Dragon gas fields, as well as some of their oil fields. But outside of that, most of the Caribbean avoids doing business with Venezuela, primarily because of secondary sanctions from the United States. So the entire argument being drummed up right now just seems to be garbage, for lack of a better term. And I say this as someone who lives in the region, and inevitably, whenever a country implodes in any region in the world, what happens, Tate?
Migration.
Yep.
Migration.
So,
we have another wave of conservatism.
Apparently, yes. So I guess the plan is to have more Venezuelan migrants in the United States or all of the neighboring countries, including Brazil, Colombia, Guyana. So good luck.
Yeah,
I got no power here. So, Ani could report on what's happening. But it is what it is. Unfortunately, I had the displeasure, Tate, of gazing upon the promise. We're in a by-election season.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever cared less about a... I just don't care anymore. Like, I know I'm supposed to, and I'm obviously going to talk about it and discuss it. But it honestly feels like the voting doesn't even matter, because it's not going to change much in terms of the majority that's in the House. But beyond just simply this by-election, it just seems to me virtually pointless.
I agree.
Because the minutiae that we're locked in at the moment, basically since privatizing just about everything, you're not reversing this with a change of administration.
Yeah.
This is pretty bipartisan, even though I'm sure the opposite side, the red people, will say that that is not the case. When some people in your organization are also invested in these things, in the privatization of public utilities, you're not reversing course in any. Honestly, it just feels like pomp and pageantry, and I guess a way to stimulate the economy for some by buying shirts, and a lot of importers make a lot of money for picket signs, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
I don't know, Tate, if you feel the same apathy that I do. I hope not.
I think for me, like, I stopped caring a very long time ago, to be honest. To me, like, this game makes no type of sense. I don't know what it was to me. I think it was like, was it after like the 2021 general election? I don't think it was then, but like around then, when I started like see how the PLP was behaving in terms of like governance, right? But basically to me, like, I don't see this administration as a real administration. I think they're more focused on communications, and how they think is more so to the matter is making noise about the fact that you did something than actually doing something and making sure that what you did is effective. I think we've seen that in many cases when it came to how they tried to handle the so-called cost of living crisis in the country, and how they basically said that they kind of, in a sense, solved the problem when they didn't. And so, yeah, a lot of this to me is like, it doesn't not necessarily make any sense, but it's all like really just pomp and pageantry at this point to me.
Yeah, I'm not happy to hear that you feel basically the same way. I was hoping, you know, you felt a little differently. You had some hope. But yes,
Am I in full time?
Yeah, I mean, what is that I have hope in, right? Well, you know, you could always have hope in what the fellow name is. Lincoln Bandman, you know, he can save us. No one's coming to save us, bro. My reasoning for it, like I said, the by-election isn't going to move the needle. I guess it'll be a bit of a referendum on this administration.
Yeah.
And I basically went through social media to see, try to understand the mood of Bahamians, but it's kind of difficult. Yesterday, of all days, which is Halloween, and also I think it was Ratification Day, it was difficult to do that because obviously the people that show up to these things, I don't mean in person, I mean just even online to watch live streams, etc., are supporters. So you don't get a real good sense of how the public necessarily feels about it. We don't do public polling. It is my understanding that a lot of the political parties do employ the services of private firms to conduct scientific polling within the Bahamas, of which they never release this data to the public. So I'm sure something has been done by the PLP and the FNM, at least, in this regard, and they have some idea of how this could possibly go for them. I'm sure both are hopeful that they'll be victorious, but I have no sense of it for the country. So I guess the only way we'll be able to tell how at least this one particular community feels about the Davidson in this by-election, which...
Yeah.
I guess they'll have the seat for maybe 11 months, depending on when the prime minister calls an election. So good luck to the candidates. But I would say it doesn't matter as much how the needle, which direction the needle goes in, because I guess it would matter more by the time next year, the same. Well, when is the election due? September, October?
September, yeah.
Yeah, it would. I guess whatever legislation and efforts they're able to pull through by between now and then, which doesn't seem like much, I guess will give you a better understanding. But from some of the things that I've seen in the news, especially in particular to the junk canoe situation, which is just an absolute... what's a nice way of saying this? I don't quite understand... And I'm not throwing shit at anybody. I don't understand how we got to this place. I deliberately have not paid attention to it. Because CJC say, the government say this, they say this, the group say this, this one in court, that one in court, the minister making statements on this, the prime minister saying something different, this next minister saying something different, this MP have a different thing to say, the JCNP release a statement, the public, it's like... Don't you have, like, a WhatsApp group? Can't you, like, meet and discuss things, like, civilized adults? Like, this is just chaos, bro. And yeah. I'm saying this as someone who has family who booked tickets to specifically come to the country to watch Junk Canoe for Christmas. Apparently, there's going to be a parade, and apparently, there's not going to be a parade, and apparently, these groups aren't going to show up to the parade. So, I don't know. This is, in my estimation, a black eye on this administration. Of this whole debacle in reference to which junk canoe group is supposed to have which name, which volley boys reel, decisions made by various ministers, the political interference in decisions made by some of these boards. I just... Chaos.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So I'm very much confused about this whole junk canoe thing, right? Not necessarily like what's going on with Valley Boy splitting and stuff like that, right? I mean, I can understand that. But I'm just curious about why is the government trying to take over Junk Canoe? That's what I'm confused about. I mean, this administration, like you pointed out, has been basically, what is it now, privatizing almost everything or accelerated the privatization of like a lot of... Bahamian owned enterprises or state owned enterprises, and now was trying to take over and create like a national junk authority. That to me doesn't sound like it's consistent, unless they're trying to give Junkanoo to somebody else. This just doesn't make any sense to me, to be honest.
You know, I didn't think of it from the ways of, at least the Junkanoo situation, from privatization. That's interesting. I got to give that some more thought. I have followed, like I said, some of the news with the NJC. But it's confusing, and it's very mixed messaging in terms of what the intent is for basically anything. In terms of the intent of the groups, the intent of the government. There's no... I would say that I can't see a clear policy to say this is the direction we like to head in and we're going in this direction. It just seemed like we just bucking up all over the place.
For me, I feel like they put the privatizers too.
You know, in any other universe, or if this was like 3 years ago, never in my life would I have agreed with you. But well, at least with this administration, anyway,
it's starting to make sense. Junkanoo Carnival, what has basically failed? Has it? Or is it like...
Basically. Okay. I don't think it's actually gotten a return on investment. We never got the report, the initial reports or anything. So I guess that's a fair assessment.
So this can only be like seeming like some takeover. Junkanoo, this is what this seems like to me, to be honest. And potentially giving it into private hands. Or giving the control over it to somebody or to some private group.
You're saying like it's potentially be like a proto or a test to see if you can actually move one thing from one place and the next place.
And so I'm thinking maybe it's like a process of shifting hands, right? So the government takes it. Shapes it up into what it needs to be, and then hands it off to private owners. That's what this feels like.
I need to read into not necessarily the news, because I see obviously in the news that I need to see the document basically that governs the NJC, which is the National Junkanoo Committee, which the government has essentially announced that they will be responsible for the management of Junkanoo parades across the country. I don't think the idea of a national authority to govern Junkanoo is necessarily a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I will admit that I do not trust this administration. I look with every Bahamian administration with jaundiced eyes, because prime ministers tend to have very shifty priorities, and governments oftentimes have spider fingers. They just lift things and don't put things back. Right. They break things and they just remain broken. And like I said, it's like you created this institution specifically to undermine or to replace, it seems, I don't know, the national, the JCNP. And now, I don't have an answer for this. It's just chaos is the nicest way that I can put this. And I think it is indicative of basically, how do I say this without saying this? This is par for the course at this point, I dare say. I'll be very correct in my statement. I am not surprised by the results. I just hope that there is, in fact, a full parade, because, you know, I actually was planning on going to Junkanoo this year, not because I go and it needs to be happening, but, you know, it's a part of who we are as a people. I just look forward to seeing what happens. I hope this kerfuffle with the JCNP and the NJC, the government of Bahamas, gets resolved sooner rather than later. And at least after this season, we'll be out of this uncertainty and chaos, and we'll have a better understanding, and we'll see how some of these court cases progress. I am not particularly a fan of basically just the nonsense that we're seeing taking place, but it is what it is. Also, something we got to discuss today, Tate, is something very concerning, confusing, and I guess we just live in a time of uncertainty and a time of absolute just chaos and stupidity. Hurricane Melissa, far through Jamaica. I don't know if "tore" is the correct word to use. It seemed to have essentially obliterated Jamaica's electricity supply, or its ability to transmit. A lot of roads have been just essentially vanished. They've had mudslides. Some communities, or some parts of some communities, are basically completely underground at this point because the mudslides they've had. It honestly looks like in some parts of Jamaica it was a war zone. And basically it was. Nature is at war with us, essentially. Climate change is real. And it seems like Cuba has had some better luck in terms of, at least at time of us talking about this, no reported deaths. They had mass evacuations of over 750,000 people from the southeastern parts of Cuba, which were impacted by Hurricane Melissa. It obviously touched the Bahamas as well. The southern Bahamas, where some roofs were destroyed. I have not seen any loss of life in the country, thankfully, yet. Hopefully never, but we did do mass evacuations. Well, the thing that I'm confused about with this whole hurricane situation is I saw a interview, and these are basically Trump opening a door in the airplane and answering questions of the press and then closing it again. So basically, he was asked the question of whether the United States would help Jamaica, which he confirmed, yes, the United States would on a humanitarian basis. There's been an outpouring of support in the region. I even saw El Salvador sent, I think it was 50 tons of supplies, some workers and power line workers to try to assist. Other Caribbean nations have also joined in. The Bahamas, I saw it announced by Chester Cooper that we would also be joining in and assisting Jamaica in their recovery process. I think, which is good, we should be good neighbors. I think they did reach out to us in the aftermath of Hurricane. They did, factually, aftermath of Hurricane Dorian. We're thankful to the Jamaicans, as well as the Jamaican Defense Force, for their assistance, especially particularly in Abaco. But how do you take, we had a situation where the president of the free world says that climate change is a hoax, and our countries are destroyed every single year from climate change. Our prime minister has, in essence, banked quite a bit of his goodwill internationally on this message of climate change. And now the U.S. president is dismantling all of it while simultaneously assisting the process of the effects of climate change from the decisions that previous presidents have made. So I feel, Tate, that we do live in La La Land. And I guess that's it. You just accept the fact that you're in it and just live your life. I don't know what this is, Tate. And I know you can't go into the thing, you know, did I understand? But where the hell do you go from here, bro?
I honestly don't know. Hold on. This is funny as hell. Sorry. If this makes any sense what I'm about to say, I think we live in somewhat of a fantasy world, but also a world that's more real at the same time. And I think those two things can be true at the same time. But, yes, climate change is real. But you have people saying that it isn't real. But also, we live in a world where the threat of, you know, the threat of war happening contradicting this idea of the Caribbean being a zone of peace, but it never really was, to be honest. But that's a whole other thing, right? It's not necessarily confusing. It's basically mind-boggling at this point of how things are happening. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Because it's crazy, Don. I don't know. this doesn't make any sense at all. But we have to live in it. And how do we live with this? I don't exactly understand how to live with this, like what's happening right now. But that's just
I feel like on an international and regional level, we are living in a reality of, I dare say, like 1983 Bahamas or 1985 Bahamas.
Like cocaine
where,
level?
Huh?
Like cocaine level?
No, well, it's like, you can clearly see what's happening around you. I wasn't alive at the time, but I didn't go by the accounts of those who were. Though the government was saying they had no involvement in it. All those indictments, cases, arrests, testimonies, court, people basically stitching on this person, this one, informant on this one, allegedly. Allegedly? I think those documents leaking was pretty substantial. Supposedly, I'll say then, you had members of parliament informing on the country and their counterparts to the FBI and other U.S. law enforcement agencies. It's like you could see all the evidence of those things happening, but you couldn't say it out loud. No one would accept or agree with you, especially in government, that these things were factually happening. But you knew it was happening because you lived the experience. That's what I feel like we're dealing with at the moment. Mm-hmm. The fact that Canada just signed this week a trade agreement with China is this real life? The country that just said China is their biggest threat like 3-4 months ago, and China's a threat to democracy and Canadian values and all this, and now basically China's our best friend in economic. Like, what's all because somebody decided we're going to throw tariffs on these guys and try to blow up their economy, and they should be the 51st state. So it's like you can't talk about it. You can't say, obviously, what your eyes are seeing before you, but you need to accept what they say, even though what they say has absolutely no correlation with what it is that they're doing. You know what it feels like? I have a better description of it. It feels like a Caribbean or Bahamian government is running the entire region now.
You know what this is? This is, do you think like this is what it feels like to be like living in Haiti? Do you get the comparison?
That's an interesting, in what way?
Like you're like, not necessarily, your state is crumbling, right?
Yes.
The state is crumbling, but everybody is meddling in your affairs and nothing makes any sense. And every new week, there's a new gang taking over Port-au-Prince. It's like, I'm not trying to make fun of it.
I laugh because it's like, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. How insane the situation is.
Exactly. This is what it's like to be like living in the Haitian state.
The remnants, well, I guess I can say the Haitian government, the appointed Haitian government they reached a statement on the situation in Venezuela too, Tate, where they said that they can't get involved in decisions that America makes, and, you know, they ain't got no place to say that. It's like, Jesus Christ. Yes, it does feel, you know what, you do get the impression, especially with the fact that our prime minister, the government of the Bahamas has finally acquiesced and bent over on the Cuban doctors and teachers program and completely ended it. Not suspended, but it seems ended as Washington has, you know, said. I don't think they responded. I don't know. I didn't see that they actually responded because, you know, the government still is shut down. I haven't seen a statement from Rubio. I'm sure they had a conversation and through back channels, and they said that they're going to, you know, give us some alternative means of sourcing the personnel that we need. But it's like, we also do live in that reality, Tate, where America poaches a lot of our nurses because we don't pay them properly. So exactly. It's kind of like, I can't say what I would say, but it's like, yeah, but I feel it. I really feel.
We're Haitians. We're in Haiti. That's who we are. That's who we are.
You know, I can't even argue against that. Look, just even with the Trinidadian Prime Minister, just straight up, seemingly, allegedly, just straight up lying to the press. The Trinidadian Minister of National Security making absolutely asinine statements. I'm gonna lie. Honestly, I felt when I saw that interview, that back and forth between him and the journalist, when the journalist asked him, does he have evidence that any of the people being killed in these U.S. strikes on these boats off the coast of Trinidad are Trinidadian nationals? I mean, what evidence to support that these people are involved in the drug trade and there's factually drugs on the boat? Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, why is there not arrest being made rather than just extrajudicial killing? And his response was, you can't just, nobody asks, his words, not mine, nobody asks Trinidad about what's going on in Libya and Lebanon or in the Middle East. So why are you asking us about what's happening in international waters off the coast of Trinidad?
What sense does that make?
Exactly. You know, it was given Wayne Monroe the whole time. You know, because Wayne say, if you don't want dead, just don't smuggle drugs. And again, I don't disagree with necessarily the message. It's just absurd coming from Wayne, considering his stances on basically everything in the last 15 years, just being like one extreme asinine statement to the next. I remember he made the statements about supporting torture for illegal migrants. So I was like, this is very much so in line with things that Wayne says. There's nothing out of the ordinary in it. But it's like, do you take into consideration, based on his statement, I want one of these strikes in Bahamian waters? Like, what's your response going to be then? You could just tell the public, well, them fellas just doing drugs. And that's it? Yeah. So it's kind of like, I feel like all of us have the same government in the Caribbean. Yeah. All of us are in the exact same boat where we live in a reality that we cannot publicly discuss. Yeah. And the governments of our countries have issues that they want to have addressed, but they cannot publicly address their grievances because they will be sanctioned. Yeah. So it's like, I dare say it feels basically, I hate using the example of Orwell in 1984. We don't live in a surveillance state realm, Tate. We live in a surveillance region.
Yeah.
And I dare say the issue what I have with this is I get the impression, and I'll be very honest and I'll be fair and I'll be, I think we have a caller, but I want to be fair to this current administration. I gather from my understanding of the things they've done, there is a desire to change the way that some of our countries in the Caribbean works, from Mia Motley to Brave Davis to some of the things that he've done. Fullness seems to be going in that direction. And it seems like where our governments were 10, 15 years ago is where our big brother is at the moment. Mm-hmm. And we're not allowed to go further than we are. You need to come back.
Yep.
Anyway, let's take this call right quick. Madam Producer. Anyway, good morning, Carl. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good morning to all.
Good morning.
Yes. You guys say, or a lot of people say that there's nothing we can do, to be just masters in North, But I say that because of because of our proximity, our proximity is our greatest resource. You see, and they have to treat us fairly just because of our proximity. We can see the light from from where we are. You understand me, from Miami, so. We can resist, because, like I said last week, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You see, what that means, but our cost of living in the Bahamas, right? Why is it that we seem to want to do the things that we say that all we doing, like IRCA says, well, they're dealing with their regulations like other, hello?
Right here.
No, you said
like it's done in other countries. We always say that best practices. But why is it that we we do want to, the deal with the practices of the income tax to bring down our cost of living and get rid of this duties, you understand what I'm saying, on our goods, you know, on the things we consume, you see? And, you know, and it's sad. And I, you know, another thing I like how you stated that, you know, it doesn't matter who we vote for because, you know, they are bipartisan on the money. They are bipartisan on the great, on the issues. The only issue they have is who's more transparent than the next. You know, we do need an alternative government. You see, and you guys, like you guys are an alternative show, trust me. Because I have to say that Erica has a policy that, that when you run a show that, that was registered by them or licensed by them, has a view that they need, they should have a opposing view as well?
Something of the sort, yes.
So you see, and then we have people, they ask in for politicians to debate, but they don't want to debate on their own shows. What is this? It's not democratic, you know, that they boast on. And then last thing, please address how people are running away from socialism, especially the social democratic, you know what I mean, system around the world, and they think these are the places that work. Even in the United States, the most socially driven states in the United States, they take care of the what you call it, the other ones, the Republican states, you know, and socialism works, you know. Why can't and anyway. Please continue on and, you know, do your best. Thank you.
Appreciate that. I think my... Can you hear me now, Tate?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're good. You're good.
Yeah, well, I think disconnect for a second. Yeah, no, I heard what he said. You know, I don't want to sound crazy, but I definitely, Tate, don't think that the PLP in its current form is the same party that Pendling led. Their politics are more conservative in terms of economics than it's ever been. And I can't point and say that the FNM is pretty much any different. They seem pretty bipartisan on this issue, especially when it comes to privatization. I dare say, Tate, I am very pro us just straight up nationalizing some things. The dumpster fire of that place in the northern Bahamas being one of them, but that's another conversation for another day. Or at least giving people some degree of value for their interest, anything, whether it be a specific industry or whatever. But I don't get that from the... I don't think there's any interest when it comes to national security in this country on anything to do with economics. For the most part, it just seems we are more profit-driven. And I know a lot of the advice given, as I've read the IMF reports, they just put a report recently, actually, that basically stipulates that the government should privatize essentially all state-run enterprises, which is... Actually, I went back and I read, after reading the report, this is now November... but reading the report in October, I went back and I found a report from 2013, basically just copied and pasted. Of course, some things have changed, the numbers were slightly different, but it's basically the exact same advice. And I find it fascinating that they keep giving us this advice and pushing this on the entire Caribbean, when the United States, where the IMF is essentially headquartered, is going in the exact opposite direction. Like, they are purchasing large chunks and stakes in private enterprise, for instance.
Yep.
They are essentially, I wouldn't call them state-run enterprises, but, you know, they kind of, in many ways, mimicking a lot of the behaviors that China has done.
Yep.
The very same things they told us never to do. But they still given us this garbage advice in saying that once you privatize these things, your economic output and productivity will increase. And as we've clearly seen from Argentina, that don't work. But these people still giving us this garbage advice. And it seems to me that our government has been listening to this advice. So I this is once again the way we talk about this, like you feel like you're in a parallel universe. I feel like that's what it, this whole time, Tate, I think you described it very well, is we all in the Caribbean actually live in Haiti, but we don't know it. Exactly. We have not paid attention to it because you have some creature comforts. But this whole time, this has been going on.
You've been living in Haiti.
It's like, who is our barbecue today?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not making fun of the situation or plight in Haiti, by the way. It's just that the chaos that they're experiencing where the government, where a president would be ordained from the great powers up north, and supposedly the people elect them. And then the president says, we're going to do this, this, and this to improve the country. And then 5 days later, does completely the opposite. Then they protest, burn things down again, president first course, and then probably gets assassinated. But it's like, it doesn't matter what they have to say about their country. It doesn't matter what they feel the direction of Haiti should go into. It ain't ever going in that direction, at least not in my lifetime. Right. And to me, and maybe other people feel differently about it, I do get that impression from my own country a lot of the time. And it feels like you're just on a set rail and you're going at 2,000 miles an hour to absolutely nowhere. We're going into mangroves in Abaco, in Andres.
Yeah, and it's like, I just think the whole Cuban racist thing is just embarrassing to even admit to at this point. And so it just shows like the state that we're in, and maybe it's not fair to say the state that we're in. Maybe we were always in that state. We're just not finally able to see it, what it actually is, right? And to go back to Don's point, we're not making fun of Haiti at all. It's just like, let's be honest about it. Like, we had our comforts. We were, I would say, dare say, in a sense of not necessarily ignorance, but we believe that because of some comforts, we weren't like Haiti. But now it's becoming clear, like, you know, that specifically with the Cuban doctors thing, but also like how this, what's happening up north in terms of like administration and how it's affecting regional power balances and regional issues, and the fact that we're about to probably have another war. It just shows that like that thinking of that we were sort of different from Haiti, or that we were not like Haiti, it doesn't make any sense anymore. Well, it never did, but like you can't deny it anymore. Like we were always like Haiti. I think maybe we were like differing magnitudes of it, but now since then, because what's happening up north, I think it's becoming clear that they never respected us. And this idea or the facade of power never existed.
I think the issue of, we talk, sovereignty is a fantasy. Let's keep it 100%. I literally watched the people up north tell the Dutch government to nationalize a Chinese-owned chip and lithography producer, which is, if you know, as you don't know, the microprocessors in your computers, your television sets, your phones. Basically, there is, I think, two companies, ASML basically being the crux of the makers of the machines that allow people to make microprocessors and computers. China had bought into one of the companies called Xperia. I'm not sure if you saw this tape. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you how absurd and stupid we are existing in. The Dutch government seized the company, sent the police and military in to seize the company in Holland. And right after that, the Chinese government got wind of what was happening and essentially cut off all communications with the headquarters in the Dutch capital, and said to all employees, because Xperia is also based predominantly for its manufacturing in China, that the business has now been nationalized, basically, and that do not communicate with the offices in Europe, and we're strictly operating from based in China. So guess what happened, Tate? Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, the U.S. and China just came to an agreement this week, and Donald Trump went to South Korea. So they reversed the deal and said that all the trade restrictions that the United States was placing on China for chips is going away. So basically, the Dutch government nationalized it for absolutely no reason. And this is the problem that you face when you have essentially diplomacy by Twitter and breakneck changes in policy. Like one second you're going in this direction. Or as we said, with Cuban Minister, right? Sometimes you got to head out east and you got to change your mind and head out west. Well, plenty of that happening. And consequences of this is it interrupts supply chains.
Right.
But also, we've come to realize that the idea of sovereignty of nations is garbage.
Yeah.
Right? Europe is basically, has already assumed the position. So, whatever Uncle Sam's saying can happen. And to be honest with you, I'd treat them the same way if I was in Uncle Sam's position. And I think the Caribbean is also in this position. And if you look at a lot of, well, I unfortunately had the pleasure and displeasure of doing this. I had to dig through the archives of basically reporting on foreign relations within the Caribbean for the last 20 years at some point. And something became very clear is the emergence of China, basically. And all the reporting around it has been that the Caribbean countries are selling their sovereignty. They're selling their nations to the Chinese in order to get a couple of dollars and some loans, and they can trap you all with debt and everything. And what I always found hilarious about that argument, I was like, so that's what you're always doing to us, though.
Exactly.
Is that not what the UK and all these Western institutions are doing to us? And they were like, the Chinese, I remember seeing a statement that the Chinese, every time they give loans in the coffee business for Chinese firms. And I was like, but y'all do the same thing. We borrow money from Western institutions. Then we have a list of vendors that we are able to go to. That's why, you know, Jose Cartelone was here and we was doing a road development project, right? You got to pick through the people they select. And of course, you can have local more. There's an argument that can be made to say that Western loans allows, at least in the Caribbean, more local involvement in the project in terms of jobs. Maybe. That's an argument that you probably can make, even though the government of Bahamas supposedly negotiates these things on our behalf and then proceeds to not enforce the things that they negotiated, as we saw with the point, but that's a whole other conversation. This idea of sovereignty doesn't matter if you're trying to get anything done by yourself. And the Bahamas is only a tiny little country of 400 and some thousand people. It's, as we can clearly see with the CARICOM situation in Venezuela, we're not very in tuned or united on anything that we say. Most of our statements are big, fat, nothing burgers. Aside from Mia Motley, and also the Prime Minister of Antigua and Barbuda, anybody in this region really got a hard moat. So it's like, if you point at any of us at any point in time, Tate, our government will fold.
Yeah.
And yeah, that part worries me. Because, like, they ain't even ask you to ban it, you didn't ban it. Bro, stand up. What happened to you scraping your knees? What's going on? It's like, brother, what are we doing?
You even ask for no rug or nothing, man. Yes. No pillow,
like, at least take the dinner or something. It's and a massage. Jesus not Christ.
Not even kiss me, you know?
Oh my God. We just literally, whatever they want, we just
give up. Give
in. So yeah, this idea, Tate, I think of sovereignty is false. You know what the part that actually bothers me the most about this is that when we discuss politics in the Bahamas, especially when I saw in the by-election, which is why I kind of checked out, it's like, the slogans are consistently used. I'm the right man for the job. I'm the only one who can get things done. I can change things in here. And it's like, that is not your job. Your job is to legislate, advocate for policies, legislation, changes in legislation, amendments to the Constitution. on behalf of their constituency. And I understand that there are people that, I dare say, the majority of Bahamians do not view members of parliament as legislators. They view them as community leaders, employment agencies, baby daddies, basically mascot to show up to family events. Yeah. I understand that there's a need for that community aspect, and I'm sympathetic to that. But it's like, this is why, I know it's a pointless conversation. This is why you should have local government. But it's like, if you dig beyond the BS rhetoric that we consistently use in the political game in the Bahamas and actually interrogate the issues that factually impact the lives of everyday Bahamians, you will quickly realize that the people running for a lot of these constituencies are absolutely powerless to change anything. And I can go further in depth in this, but I shall not, because then I'll have to reveal some things. But I wish our political discussion in country revolved more around international issues, because the Bahamas is essentially, and has been for quite some time, the center, not the center, by whatever happens in the regional and international arena, but in our local politics, it never really becomes a part of discussion. Our involvement with CARICOM, our relationship with the United States, our relationship with China. We don't talk about those things. We make noise right before an election, and then you vote them out, and then we just pretend like that didn't happen.
Yep.
So it's like, I feel oftentimes that engaging even in the political process in this country is nigh pointless, because respectfully, what is, let's say that the, anyway, let me shut up. I don't want to be negative. I want people to vote and practice their constitutional rights or not. I want them to make that decision on their own. But it's just,
well, I just want to say, if you don't feel like voting this election, I just want you to know that you're not stupid. That is a very valid thing to do. I probably shouldn't be saying this on air, but I don't think people who choose not to vote aren't stupid. I don't think they're stupid. I think that they have realized that this game that we play every 5 years or every 4.5 years, if you think about minutes, is pointless. Your country has been going in the same direction for the last 20 years, and nothing's being done about the problems that you face every day. So if you don't see any change, I get it. I honestly understand it. Because you vote the FNM back in, they could do the same thing the PLP doing. You give the COI a chance. I don't really trust them, but you know, you get what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
You know, I read their platform, because the PLP and FNM have yet to put out a platform. And you know, I also take into consideration, Tate, that political parties in the Bahamas will need to put out platforms. Only 8 people can read it. So they're virtually just worthless documents that have absolutely no correlation for public discourse and politics whatsoever in the Bahamas. Bahamians don't read it. They don't engage with it. They don't discuss it. They don't care. The journalists will read it. A handful of politically conscious, well, I mean, conscious isn't the right word, politically interested individuals in reading that type of literature will bother to read it. But the masses could honestly care less. I just, for lack of a better term, I agree with you. I wouldn't agree that the COI would necessarily do the same thing based on their platform. I think they would take some very extreme measures in immigration.
Yeah.
They would seek to amend the Constitution, of which, honestly, I suspect they may actually have a better chance of doing than the PLP and FNM ever did in having any referendums on, because the parts of the Constitution they would like to change require a referendum, because that's an entrenched part of the Constitution. They want to change some laws, which they could just do with an act of Parliament, but you'd obviously need a majority in the House to agree. I think they would actually take the country in a different direction based on their rhetoric and based on their own platform. Do I think that that is a good direction? I think some parts of their platform seem somewhat constructive. However, I question the reality of it because it's kind of like when the DNA used to put out those white papers, which some of which were written very well. I read Yuri Kamsun on basically running a drop cord from Florida to the Bahamas to solve our electricity problem. I get the impression it's quite clear from the way that it's written that they ain't ever do this before. And that's fine, right? Because you are a new party, in essence. And I'm not chiding him for it, but it's like, I can clearly see how some of those things are not going to work out.
Yeah.
Because of the realities that we face. And like I always say, everybody mowed hard in opposition. Like Fred Mitchell mowed hard when he in opposition. And when they get in government, yeah, a lot of the things they criticize the previous administration for, they do themselves.
Yep.
So I guess you're a bit right. We are on a path. We're locked on paths that we seem incapable and paralyzed and essentially reversing. But all it really takes, honestly, to change any of these things is for people to pay attention, man.
Yeah.
And ask questions. Like, it's really that simple. I can't tell you how many town hall meetings I've gone to, Tate, where I think the first time you go, when they have like a series of them, you see maybe 11 other people, and you all shake hands, say hello, and get to know each other. And then you go to the next one, like 2 weeks later, and you realize it's the same 11 people. And then you go to the next one, and then it's 7 people out of that same 11 people. And you start to realize, oh, it's only like 14, I say.
Yeah.
And then you just stop going. I disengaged, and I realized that it's the same group of people. And there's nothing wrong with those folks. It's just the wider public isn't engaged. So basically what I'm just saying here is absolutely nothing is going to shift. I feel like this process of this by-election, the people's voice should be heard, but I also think people's voice don't matter. Because if you vote for the Progressive Party, they just maintain a seat. You vote for the FNM, they just gain one seat. Can't do nothing with that. Can't change anything. Can't fight legislation with it. Backbenchers still ain't gonna have no hard more to say nothing. So, yeah. You know, it's like, is it really democracy?
No, man. But it never was. But that's just where we are. This is the Bahamas. Tourism is everybody's business.
Oh, God. I wish we'd pick, I just wanted to be clear about that. I know, because randomly someone saw me in public and just decided to have a roast of me and my position on tourism, and they were semi-white tourism. I have nothing against tourism. I just feel like we could continue to do it, and you can continue to spend the focus that you do in investments and the personnel, like you have the Ministry of Tourism, et cetera, to do tourism. It's just, I think we should do some other things too, you know? But I don't think you should put all your eggs in the tourism basket. But it was one thing the Bahamas government will do. It is absolutely nothing to change that. So I got to say, though, Tate, the message, I guess, that I would like to pass on, especially to the, I guess there's really no message to pass on to these potential candidates, is, I would say, pay attention to what the grassroots people on the ground have to say. I've said this before to many people. I think the Coalition of Independence has a hell of a lot more support than a lot of Bahamians want to give them credit for.
I agree.
And
yeah, I agree. Trust me, I agree. When I was in Nassau this summer, I took the bus a few times. And just listening to people talk on the bus, they have a good share of supporters. And to me, that is kind of scary, but that's a whole other conversation. But
no, I don't disagree with you. And the reason I think this is happening, Tate, is that the PLP and FNM basically are, I'm going to be very politically incorrect when I say this. I think our two major political parties in this country are, yeah, they are tone deaf. They are deaf. They can't hear. And I'm seeing this pattern repeat all across the world with these third parties that people initially call fringe and they ain't nobody, and then inevitably they start calling leaders of opposition crackheads, allegedly. And then they start getting seats, and then it becomes very, especially in major countries, like, well, much larger countries, I should say, in developed nations like Germany, most of Europe is going in this direction. Sizable chunks of Asia, including Japan, just did, right? Where some of the fringes of political organizations or fringe parties become the major dominant political powers within the country. And it is not because they have some secret sauce. It is not because they just better at campaigning than you. This campaigning is, aside from getting people to know who you are, is virtually just a colossal waste of money because it don't actually change a damn thing for the people. Mm-hmm. What it actually is they pay very close attention to the little things that bother the hell out of people that become gigantic. Back about 15 years ago, if you had said to any major European power that within 5 years, immigration is going to become the biggest problem in your country, most of them would have said that you're absolutely, you don't know what you're talking about, you're an idiot. And absolutely none of them are still in power today who would have said that to you. And most of them will now agree that, yes, it in fact was actually the biggest issue. And our policies of invading and bombing other countries has directly led to this reality. Syria and Libya being classic examples of this. So,
and that's why I'm saying that, you know, this war in Venezuela will like just bring about a third wave of like what, maybe conservatism or another wave of conservatism?
Yeah, I think it will. I absolutely think it will. And that has consequences for us as well. But I guess the entirety of CARICOM, Trinidad is going to, if that country implodes, Trinidad is going to be on the front lines of that emergency. So good luck to them. But
I will not feel sorry for them. I'm sorry.
I feel sorry for the people.
For the people, yes.
But the current administration, They that's what they vote for, though. So, you know.
Yeah.
So, I guess instead of saving with us as menace. But I what I'm trying to get at here is the appeal to people on immigration. The prime minister keeps saying that there's an immigration crisis. The minister, the commissioner of police, the minister of national security, repeatedly over the years of this administration and even the previous administration have said that crime ain't an issue. We got crime under control, and it would be not funny, but ironic that right after they say it, you have like a spree of murders, or like a spree of armed robberies, a bunch of rapes. A handful of suicides right afterwards, and or there'd be some major drug bust like we had, and it's like the words that are coming out of your mouth and the reality that people are living don't align. And when that becomes the case, and some other third party shows up and is saying the things that essentially coalesce with the experiences that people are actually having in their real lives, that party becomes more legitimate than you.
Yep.
And I get the impression that the COI is doing that. I don't think, this is my opinion now, I don't think it matters particularly much what happens in this current election cycle. If the COI survives election defeat, even if they get one or two seats, whatever they do, whatever happens, I don't know. If they survive and hold together as an organization, and maybe even change leader, I think the next election cycle, they are incredibly, increasingly likely, if we can't continue in the current trend where the two major parties remain absolutely tone deaf, and if the government is to change to a different, to the FNM or whatever, and they proceed to assume the same position that the last administration and the administration before that did, it massively increases the chances of them gaining seats.
Yeah.
And it also massively increases the chances of parliamentary wipeouts, because you're not listening to the people. And it seems like every single leader of the Progressive Liberal Party historically, when they became unpopular, couldn't see that they were unpopular and would run a campaign when they really should have resigned or allowed someone else to take their place, like Christie, for example, and they took the most royal cut hip you would ever see. I don't know if that's going to happen this time, but all I'm saying is, if we continue on this direction, you're basically guaranteeing that the people who minimize the most, because you go on social media, you see GOPs and FNMs delegitimizing the coalition independence are attempting to. These very same people sitting in the seat of where the MP that you was trying to prop up in your party would have been. And I don't think people take that very seriously. But politics, it does, just because we would say, for instance, Tate, that the PLP and FNM are basically going in the same direction, doesn't mean that politics is a pointless game. Mm-hmm. We're only saying that specifically because they have no interest in changing anything, and this is the way that they govern. If someone new gets in, they will do things their way, and they will change things. Some things will absolutely remain the same, but as you can clearly see, there are consequences to elections. Clearly, as we're seeing all around the world and to our good friends in the North, our good partners, right, Tate? Yep. And if you don't take those consequences very seriously, you can feel it. And I got to say this to everybody, and I know some people hate discussing politics. We don't usually get into the nitty-gritty at this one. We don't really care. That doesn't matter. Or who lit big. Or whether or not the girls are fighting in whichever constituency and who giving somebody hot dog. Anyway, I bring this up specifically to say politics cares deeply about you. You may not care about politics. You may not be interested in politics, but politics is interested in you. Every aspect of your life, regardless of what country you live in, is consequently impacted by political decisions. And in countries like ours in the Caribbean, it is disproportionate. Actually, that's not true. It is more so the case here, oftentimes, than... Well, actually, I retract that statement. It used to be it was more disproportionately the case here. I think this is now a global trend where all, even major countries, developed nations, are basically going in the precisely same direction. Elections have consequences, and I want people to understand that. But simultaneously, if you're going to engage in the system, to do so in a... Be critical. Ask questions. And I dare say, oftentimes, be insulting. If you dislike something about your a candidate or your MP or whoever it is, say what you got to say. As I promise you, you don't say it, they don't care. So, it is what it is. That's the nicest way I can put that, Tate.
Well, I think it's fair. I mean, we're living in a very mass, in a very much so like a world with the mask coming off. I think you should be honest with your member of parliament, hurt their feelings. And don't just be nasty to be nasty, but be very critical in a way that is not necessarily constructive, but it makes sense. Like, don't, I mean, I wouldn't call somebody big lip just to call them big lip, right? But I mean, like, if you think like the thing that, like, so thinking about when that boy, the what's his name, man? What his indigenous wife?
Halston Mutri.
Halston Mutri.
Speaking of,
him getting up there with himself and going out there to install that. What was that? That was a pump, right?
Hand pump in his constituency.
He should have been embarrassed of that. We should embarrass him for doing that, right? That, in that sense, doing things in times of dire need when it should have been done a long time ago, you're just doing it because of a hurricane or because of a storm. Like, you should feel embarrassed to be doing the bare minimum for your constituents and just provide them with like bare necessities. Why are we talking about hand pumps in 2020, right? And so I agree with you. I think you need to embarrass your MPs. Talk to them bad. Talk to them stink. Let them know how you feel to really show and to convey that you think that the political party that they represent and the policies that they practice are complete garbage. And I think that's very fair to do.
But there's a side to that is you also have Bahamians, regular ordinary citizens, who actually... like the system being the way that it is.
And don't even get... No, oh, my God. Anyway,
I agree with you. I think a part of this whole effort to basically change political behavior in the country also requires us to call out these people, not just call them out, but also, you know, when you have, this is the thing that I hate about town hall meetings, or when the University of the Bahamas has those debates, is the, whichever party it is in power or trying to make a statement would bus in a bunch of people to the event, which I don't have an issue with people showing up to participate, but they all come in their party regalia, and they're not there to actually have a conversation, to participate, to ask questions, to dig into issues. Their objective is to obstruct, to basically, in some cases, scream down other people who got questions to ask. It's not constructive to democracy at all. In some cases, I remember vividly when we had the debates and Ken Dorsey went up on stage to speak. These like pile of people were in the room, all wearing the PLP shirts. And every time he finished the sentence, "Yeah, Ken. Yeah, that's my MP." I was like, "All right, great, boy." And then someone asked, and the jeers they just throwing at people. I watched people sit down. They didn't want to ask a question because these people basically was insulting them. Mm-hmm. And some of them actually got removed. And after he spoke, half of them basically left. So we understood the play. And that's happened multiple times. So it's not constructive to actually having any public policy dialogue on virtually anything. And some of the statements he made, I absolutely agreed with on stage at the time. He talked about climate change being real, blah, 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 blah. Some of his statements were absolutely asinine. And that's a whole other conversation for another day. But it's kind of like you got to find out who got leprosy or something, you know, Tate. Like, something would have happened to people's brain when they actually believe the nonsense the party just tell them. Because from my understanding, I don't even think the parties just believe the things they just be telling people sometimes.
Exactly.
The purpose is not for them to believe. The purpose is not for them to believe. The purpose is for the people, their followers, to believe and to get hyped. You know, like, and a lot of the promises aren't very, they don't have, like, much depth. Just random, just like, we're going to provide more jobs for Bahamians. No explanation of how, when, all of the what is the 4 W's and 1 H? None. It's just like, we're going to do this. And for some people, that's enough. But I think it falls back on education, you know, and critical thinking. So this is why every week I always say, education, educate yourself, think a little bit deeper.
I am critical now that you said that, Crystal. I agree with you on the education part. I personally think every election cycle should be, politically speaking, life and death for leaders of parties. I personally think the way that we practice politics should change.
Wait, hold on, Dawn. Slow down. Just a pin, right?
Go ahead.
Don't be careful with the way you say life and death.
I said politically. Because, politically. Yeah, as in whether or not you maintain your seat.
Because for some countries right now in Tanzania, there's a lot of drama happening politically.
Well, also, you could look at the example of Sudan.
And Nepal.
Yep.
And
But yeah, I'm speaking politically, whether or not you remain in office and relevant. I think that if you decide to subject yourself as a leader of a party and put yourself up for an election, that if the Bahamian people don't want your government to win, that there should be a concerted campaign by, I don't know who should put on the campaign, whether it's the public, either of the three parties running, but that should be campaigns specifically targeting the seats of leaders of parties. That includes Michael Pintard and Brave Davis, or Philip Davis, I should say.
Because he ain't brave, for sure.
It should be a situation of, if you lose an election, you end up like Christie. Basically, in my opinion. Because it seems the only way in some of our political organizations that the leader actually changes is when they lose their seat. Or they absolutely can't win an election. And I think the three times, actually the two times, I should say, that the POP has actually changed leader within the last 63 years has been because the leader couldn't win or they lost their seat.
Yeah.
And I think that political consequence should apply for everybody. And it should be a political, not actually, but a. And I think people need to stand on business on that.
Yeah.
My opinion.
Right. I think it's like a political carousel for us, right? And it's like some people fall off at a certain point, you know, like they fall off the horse and it's just like, well, that one's gone. But one thing that most parties I don't think would do is try to, because we have a lot of strong man leaders, I don't think they're going to remove the head. It's going to take a loss. But it's, you know what I mean? It often
yeah,
takes a loss. Yeah, it often takes a loss for them to, because I don't know if what kind of etiquette they have in their parties, but they know beforehand that they're going to lose. You know what I mean? And because we put a lot of emphasis on the leaders, so they know that they're going to lose with certain individuals at the front, and they just take the loss, and then, you know, they decide to replace. Oh, we lost because of this person. Like they did. Oh darn! Like didn't know before, but everything is like very reactive.
I think one of the few examples where, I don't know how true it is, but this is what I was told, where they absolutely didn't know that they were going to lose, seemed to be Christie. He seemed to have no inclination. And I'll be honest, and to be fair, I had no idea that he would have lost his seat. I had no idea that they'd have lost that bad. I actually predicted that they would have maintained a slim majority of by one or two seats. I didn't think it was going to be a complete and utter obliteration. And I also thought the same thing about the Minister administration. I didn't think they'd have gotten obliterated from office either. And you see that he still tried to maintain leadership of the party, which didn't work out for him. Mm-hmm. But, and I'm saying this because if you actually want change, people have to lose. I mean, yeah. Big losses, as in not necessarily wipe out an entire party from parliament. I don't think that's constructive for democracy, but I think wiping on a leader changes party leadership and can factually change the direction a party is headed in. I think that's constructive for our democracy in the first place. And I think that's the way. But obviously, I'm playing the game for different reasons than a lot of people are. I'm playing it because I just want my country to not be a... Huh. Yes, my reasons are entirely because I live here. I just want it to be better. And I understand that a lot of people play the political game so they could get jobs and contract and anything else that you could name. So not everybody playing for the same purposes. That's my opinion anyway. I my observation. But again, Tate, I shouldn't ask you in there. I think, Tate, you should register to vote if you haven't. I'll say that. I think that you should cast a ballot in some capacity. I know they just tossed the spoiled ballots because I spoiled my ballot last time. I basically wrote no confidence in any of these, can't use the term on the radio, because the options of my constituency were deplorable at the time. And now, obviously, in my constituency is...
Look who you got, Wayne Monroe.
Is Wayne Monroe.
Wayne Monroe. It's a holiday, man. Sit on a long line. Wait to vote for me and Wayne Monroe.
Yeah, that's bro.
You have options. You have options. And I'm glad that we see more people nowadays, and it's not just two parties. You have like 4 to 5 candidates, sometimes even 6 in some areas. So, and some of them are independent, some of them are with parties. So I think just listening to everyone, and sometimes like a lot of those candidates are not ideal, you know, but I think if you just have the opportunity to meet them and listen to them and hear them out and see who is like the best person or if is, figuring out if it's even worth it to vote for them. It takes another layer of critical thinking, right? To not just say, I'm going to do this, but to actually ask more questions about how and why and who.
there's more I can say to this, but I shall not. But I will say this. Tate, I would rather vote for the COI than vote for Wayne Monroe. And I want to once again make appeal to the PLP constituency branch within the constituency of Freetown, where I'm a resident, to please select somebody else. That doesn't mean that I have to vote PLP. Just give me better options, man. I know Lincoln Deal there, but that's more than a conversation. I just would like a slate of candidates from all parties to be the best possible candidates possible. But, you know, give more options. Yeah. I want options.
I wouldn't vote for Lincoln Deal either, I ain't going to lie.
At the moment, I'm leaning towards spoiling my ballot or, I don't know. If someone put a gun to my head and say COI or Lincoln, Wayne Monroe, it's I'm going to vote for the COI. I'm not voting for Wayne Monroe. And that's just me, right? And I also think that there should be consequences for political actions and things, and you say in House of Assembly. And the only time we get to say anything about these things, because they don't care what we have to say while they're in office, is when it's time. And to be honest, I just want to make this clear. I have nothing personal against Wayne Monroe, specifically as a legislator and as the Minister of National Security. I personally feel like he's done an absolutely a horrific job. I feel as though he's made very questionable statements. I don't know which side of the fence you sit on. Do you represent the government? Are you speaking as, why are you still speaking from time to time as a lawyer? I don't hear none of that. And if you point on a loophole or an issue that is quite obvious that the public has an issue with, change the law.
Yeah.
You're a legislator. This is the thing that you have power for. But obviously, he has his own mind. He has his own opinions on things. So, but yeah, I vote for him. So if you're in the part of the PLP constituency branch, I'm sure I'm not the only and the first person, as you've seen some news coverage on this, to feel this way. I hope you all select somebody different.
Oh, and please don't run Clint Watson.
Oh.
Please don't run Clint Watson. Please don't. I'm sorry.
Will Rick Fox come and do, right?
Rick
Fox. Halle Berry.
Rick Fox.
Halle Berry coming.
He's staying Canada, please.
King Charles coming too, buddy.
I don't know what Rick Fox trying to do, but buddy, stay where he is.
I know who this man is going to run with, to be honest. And again, I don't know if any Rick people listening or if Rick will ever get to hear this. But, like, whatever happened to all the projects that he was... Because I know we had a housing project in Abaco.
Exactly.
Like, what happened to it? Like, I was excited about it. I thought it was dope. And then nothing.
Yeah.
And there's something with sustainable concrete and these different types of building blocks, and they were going to build these sustainable... I don't know what happened with it. And if the answer is nothing, which I hope that is not the answer, I hope something came of it. If the answer is actually nothing, then I think that's very representative of what's going to happen if certain people gain office.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we already got plenty of that. But there's too plenty yapping and then nothing has happened.
Exactly.
I don't know. My guess, my appeal to people is we just show up to show up and glow up. And from what I've seen from this by-election, some people have been showing up to say some things to some of these people, and that warms my heart very much. So it makes me have some faith and confidence in the future. But I just want to make an appeal once again. You should read the manifestos, agendas, or platforms of each party whenever the PLP and FNM get around to actually putting out one. I know most people don't read them, but you should read them and you should question them. And specifically question your respective MP as to how this impacts your constituency. Mm-hmm. And if you get the opportunity to put questions to party leadership, whether or not you're a part of a political party, you should ask these questions directly to them. And not just softball questions, and be very strategic. Because if they have inside... like there was in the blueprint of change of how they want to create jobs for Bahamians, like you said, Crystal. Yeah, how you can do that? Like you just can go in the bathroom and create it and bring it back out to us? Like, how is this going to happen, bro? What investments are we looking at? Because, you know, they say the Grand Lucan was supposed to sell and die, you know? Nah, everybody nah, making promise.
That nah, happened yet, man.
I have no power here. So all I can do is make an appeal. I think we should end the practice of looking for baby daddy. And I think we should understand and realize that ain't nobody coming to save us. As a people, collectively, it's us. Mm-hmm. And to have that same mentality towards this political process. I'm seeing a little bit of that in this by-election, but again, it's hard to really gauge, like I said earlier, because when you go on social media to try and understand and see where people's heads are at, whichever platform you're on, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, it's a lot of people, obviously, in the initial stages of this are rabid party supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Who live in an alternative reality than they live in virtual reality. Because things good for them, apparently. And, you know, Nassau doesn't look mashup, and the roads are great. I want to live in that alternative reality. How do I do that? How do I achieve that?
Well, you got to get on your knees, man.
Man, I got bad knees. I just have to stand up to pray, Jake.
You have to stand up to pray?
Like, I got bad knees. I can't go that low.
If you want the shingles, though, that's the only way, man. I'm sorry to tell you that. That's the only way. If you want the shingles, that's the only way.
Listen, buddy. Are you serious with this? If y'all, and I was my MP previously when I was in Golden Gates. If y'all run Shane in Freetown, I would rather vote for Shane than I vote for Wayne Monroe. You know why, Tate?
Uh-huh.
This shingles is going on the roof.
That's true.
But I don't need no ice water shield, Tate. I just need some shingles.
That's it.
I'm actually not joking. I'm dead serious. Like, it is that bad. But aside from that, one more thing I wanted to say. It was our time before with Hurricane Dorian in 2019 and obviously the aftermath of the recovery. If you are going to donate or attempt to donate to the disaster recovery initiative for Jamaica, do not donate to the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Do not donate to the Salvation Army. The Jamaican government has set up a portal where you can donate. I'm saying this because, remember, everybody donated like $10 billion to Haiti after the earthquake. And they basically built 10 homes and pocketed the rest of the money on salaries and administrative fees, etc. Let me see if I can get the link for that. The Jamaican government's official bill. Melissa, let me see if I can pull that up. Yes, and they also have a thing about that if anybody sets up a lot of these fake websites, like basically, if it's not a .gov.jm or .gov.jm, it is not legit or real. So mm-hmm. Just to reiterate to everybody, the official domain portal is supportjamaica.gov.jm. So once again, that's supportjamaica.gov.jm. If you want to make a donation to assist with their recovery efforts, again, don't donate to... I'm saying this because even Jamaicans were saying that if you donate to these organizations, the relief will not get to them.
Yeah.
Basically, is a nice way of me saying, I think we've learned all collectively in the world lessons of not-for-profits. And not all of them are bad, but... let's just leave that conversation right there.
Yeah.
So once again, that's supportjamaica.gov.jm. If you'd like to make a donation, I think you can do so in whatever local currency that you have, but I think most of the time it's denominated in US dollars. Yes, as I'm sure everybody knows, Jamaica basically got massively damaged from Hurricane Melissa. We've also been touched by it as well. But our scale of damage is nowhere near Jamaica. I have no idea what's happening in Cuba, to be honest. I just saw that they did successful evacuations, but I haven't seen much reporting on the situation in Cuba. And I want to make an appeal because the Jamaicans also assisted us in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian. We've always been good neighbors. And they are brother/sister country in the region. I guess we're all brothers and sisters and neighbors. And that, you know, I think we should show up for them in the same way. Our government has also announced that we'll be sending some aid to Jamaica. And yeah, if we were in a situation, we'd be asking for the same thing. Yeah. I am strongly considering myself actually donating something because I saw the devastation firsthand on the faces of people that I met from Abaco of what they were dealing with after losing their homes. I can't imagine what they're facing at the moment in Jamaica. So want to make it jamaica.gov.jm. And I hope one day, Tate, that our government also gets around to having one centralized location where aid actually gets to people.
Yeah.
Watching the unfortunate live streams at times, I don't know how people are able to do this the way they are, but there's a lot of looting taking place. And it's simply because help can't get to people fast enough. And as a result of that, like, people's choices are, you know, they need to survive. And I know the usual logic we like to use is that, you know, that's why you keep a hurricane supply kit. And so you can have all these emergency supplies. Well, if your house is obliterated, all that goes with it doesn't it take. And similar things have happened in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian. And it is quite clear that Caribbean governments need to reorient the way that we respond to hurricanes, because we now obviously know that communities will be cut off from the rest of the country for extended periods of time in the aftermath of extreme. I was under the impression Jamaica wouldn't be in that situation since the country is basically centered on one island.
Yeah.
But clearly that is the case. So yeah. Our experience with communities and some of the islands and keys in Abaco is duplicated in Jamaica. And the same issues that I'm seeing, and one thing I can say is the big difference between our response to Dorian and the Jamaican government's response. It seems like the Jamaican government admits that there are shortcomings and they're working to address them. Our government denied that any of these things were happening. To this day, the official narrative is no looting ever took place in Abaco. The rule of law didn't break down. But if you talk to people from the place who experienced it, who were there during that time, they'll tell you absolutely that was taking place. And now we're about to put the same Minister of National Security back in office if they win, eh? Anyway,
yep.
It's the insanity of the Bahamas, right? I know for a fact, Tate, that we are not going to do anything. From our experience from Dorian, we think he's going to do the same thing. But I think for storms of this magnitude, we need to stop organizing on a national level and start coordinating on an international level, or regional at least, of how we respond to these storms when communities are cut off, and to get the materials, the supplies, and equipment we need to get to people to assist and aid, rather than basically the breakdown of the state in different areas of the state, which is, in my opinion, a very dangerous precedent to set. And I hope Jamaica doesn't end up in the same situation we did with Hurricane Dorian, where you have American private military contractors flying into the country via private jets, armored black rifles, escorting VIPs out of the country, bringing supplies back and forth, and the government has, because obviously the airport ain't functional, they just land in and come in and go in as they please. And then the government telling you that ain't happening, and you watching the live stream tape as the plane landing and the fellas coming off with the guns. So, you didn't know that happened?
This is new to me.
What?
This is new to me.
I need to send you the pictures. I'm gonna see if I can find those posts again. They were even taking photographs with it and posting it all over social media, but.
Oh.
Like the guys from the citrus? Yes, absolutely. This was no secret. And again, I'm hoping that the same type of situation doesn't happen in Jamaica. But I also understand the Bahamas is a lot more porous than Jamaica, and that our proximity to the United States is significantly closer, and our economic ties with different segments of our society are absolutely intertwined. So fingers crossed that, you know, they get their situation resolved. But I think this is a brutal reminder to us that we could be next again, and we need to prepare accordingly, which I will assure you, Tate, we will promptly not do.
Yeah. Yep.
But you got to have some faith, Tate.
Faith and brave.
Tate, what is wrong with you this morning?
I'm just being honest, man. I think at this point, I'm just like tired of everything. Like, I'm tired talking about things, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I feel it. I absolutely feel it. My words for the show, Tate.
I do think that you should talk to MP Stink, especially like if you live in. Is he running marathon again as yet? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you see Marvin Dame, ask him about what they was looting, right? Ask him about the flight plan. Talk to your MP Stink. Don't be afraid to do it. Just be very honest. Be very frank. Let them know how you feel. And don't be afraid. Because what's the worst they can do to you? Well, I shouldn't say that, but yeah.
Well, I would say, Tate, I don't think it matters anymore.
Yeah.
What they do to you. And my reason for saying that is, I get the impression every single day we're in the midst of, I'm trying to find a way to say this without getting canceled. The world is changing. That's a nice way that I'll put it. And the world order is reoriented. Our good friend up north, it seems. And this was already happening, but it feels like this is accelerating. And our country doesn't seem to be hedging its bets as much as it should, any at all, basically. And the way that we have governed and we have operated is unsustainable. We know this, which is why governments keep talking and chasing the magical budget surplus that seems ever so elusive. To right the ship before what seems to be inevitable occurs. We live in a different society than we did 35 years ago.
Yep.
For the better, I think. And I think you should be courageous in the things that you have to say, because to be very frank about it, because being honest with you, what they have to say to you doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I think you should just say what you need to say and say it with your whole chest, and it is what it is. Let the chips fall where they may.
Yep. And if you see the trade, tell them you think his press releases suck.
Wow, Tate. Oh, I must say, though, they have been, in my opinion, overly focused on. And I'm not knocking them for it, because one of the major failures of the Christie administration is PR. Yeah. But you can't overdose on the PR and not actually get results.
Yep.
So you can't spin everything. That seems to be a lesson that no government will ever really truly learn. But, you know, I can only hope for the best. I guess the final words that I want to say is, if you can and you feel like it, you should donate to the Jamaican Recovery Effort at supportjamaica.gov.jm. For those of you that live in the constituency we're now having this by-election in, I trust that you're registered to vote. I think you should exercise your constitutional right to do so. I think you should put your respective candidates to task with the questions that you have. But also, for those who are not, to view this by-election as, I dare say, not necessarily a referendum on the current administration, although we find that by-elections tend to be in this country. But referendum on the current administration and the direction the country's headed and people's opinions and thought processes on it. And learn from this example for the upcoming absolute insanity that's going to be our political season for 2026, which I expect to be one of the most consequential Bahamian elections in Bahamian history. And my reasoning for saying this purely is the country can't run deficits the way that it's been doing forever. We are in a situation where we've been upgraded in terms of our bond status, but we have to be extraordinarily vigilant. We have the looming specter of climate change and hurricanes looming over us, which could wipe out any gains that we make at any point in time. So once again, the country's at a crossroads, of which I don't think we're going to make any of the right decisions anyway. So, I dare participate in the electoral process, and that's pretty much all I got to say. It is what it is, Tate. Yep. Like we always say, many hands build a school, many hearts build, but it requires many engaged Bahamians like me and you to privatize every Jesus thing in this country. Be good, Bahamas.
Talking about a revolution. There it is.